In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh, my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Kiss excellence.
Welcome back to another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Mo.
And this is Dallin. Holy cow, you were like you sounded like a blender.
I feel like I had about 10 more seconds left in me, too.
Really?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I could have gone at least 20, 25 seconds. It was
holy endurance. What kind of training, what kind of lung capacity training have you been doing, Mitch?
Well, you know, you're in quarantine and there's a lot of training you could do when you're not doing other things that you want to do. So, lots of breathing exercises, singing tons of opera, just expanding that lung capacity, man. You got to get those alveoli or whatever they're called, the little frilly things.
Excuse me.
Got to get them wiggling. Got to get them expand.
What are you?
No, don't expand the areolas. Don't expand the areolas. That's not gonna look good in a bathing suit if you do that. Don't do that.
Well, Mitch, I'm impressed. I don't know if this is like a good thing or if this is a sign of your extreme quarantine boredom that you're like, what do I, or you take this podcast too seriously. I don't know where this lands on the spectrum, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, this is, I don't think it has anything to do with me taking it too seriously. This is not a professional production. No, so I think it's just
like
out
I'm
of
taking
boredom.
taking voice lessons, paying $1,000 a month for breathing exercises.
I've been watching Adam Lambert singing videos, just getting coached up.
Just dunk my head in the pool of water, hold my breath as long as I can.
Yeah.
Amazing.
No goggles either.
Wow, hardcore. I love it, Mitch. Yeah. Guys, welcome to the Sports Hour, and this episode is all about the NFL draft, which came and went so quick, Mitch. And I gotta say, I think every year I realize how much I'm into this when I'm watching the seventh round of the NFL draft, like hour 12 of you know, these 3 days of draft picks. And I'm thinking to myself, I have no idea who these kids are. I don't know why I'm watching. And yet I still did. And I know you did too. And it's a beautiful thing, but it's also a little eye opening.
Oh yeah. I mean, the unpredictability of draft week is just so fascinating. And you're right, it went and came. It's like summer break to an elementary school kid. It just goes and comes way too quick. I mean, it's here and then it's gone. And you miss it every time it's gone. You're like, man, I kind of wish I had like four more days of that. But let's be honest, by the sixth round, you're like, all right, let's wrap this up. Let's just get started. But we thankfully had some interesting picks in the very late round. So I just love the draft. Can't wait till next year.
It's great. I know. Give me some more, please. Give me seven more rounds. No, you know, this, I do want to say, the viewership was up significantly this draft. I think obviously part of that is the coronavirus, the fact that we don't have things to do. A lot of people are out of work or working from home, so the ability to watch the draft, much higher now. But I think, too, people were intrigued at how this would go, this totally virtual draft. And I gotta give a hand to the NFL and to ESPN, who put on a flawless production. Really, all around, it went extremely smooth, and it was also interesting. And it felt different, Mitch, but it didn't feel that different from the NFL draft we know and love.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was different. I mean, there's nothing like hearing Goodell get booed every time he walks up on stage. There's nothing like the interaction between the commissioner and the players when they get picked. You know, it's never going to replace the actual live draft that we get to see, but it was very well done. I will give props. The NFL, with the situation that we're in right now, they did a great job at producing a draft show that could be interesting and entertaining and engaging. They did a great job for the situation that we're in. So got to give them props to them. I know I was booing Roger Goodell every time he came on the TV. So.
Yeah, we were on a Zoom call watching the first round together and booing Roger Goodell at the same time. It was fun. I did enjoy that.
Only you were about 15 seconds ahead of me, so you would boo. And then 15 seconds later, like, you suck, Goodell! So.
That is true. I was watching it on the TV, Mitch on the laptop, so we had about a 30-second delay between us. It was very hard for me to hold my tongue at a few times when a pick came through and I had to not react too much to give it away.
Which, by the way, props to you for not freaking out over some of these picks.
Thanks, man.
And blowing it for me, and I'm like, Dal, just shut the hell up for a second. Like, just wait. And then once it happened, you were like, dude, bro. So,
yeah, I mean, you don't want to ruin the surprise. That's kind of the fun of it, you know, the reveal, right? But speaking of that, we're going to get into this today. So we've come up with a number of superlatives, if you will, categories, awards that we will be giving away based on the NFL draft. And we're excited to get into this. We're going to start, Mitch, with the first round, look a little heavy at the first round picks, and then open it up to mid rounds, and then ultimately the draft as a whole and how we feel about certain draft classes for specific teams.
Yeah, yep. So, and you know, if you win an award on the Sports Hour, that's a very prestigious award. So
it's a pretty big deal. I will say this may rival their draft night experience. It may. I'm not saying it will, but it might.
What we need to come up with a name for when we give out a Sports Hour award.
Call it a sporty.
A sporty?
You get a sporty? I like that. It's cute.
I like it.
It's quick. It's easy.
The sporty. So we got a list of sporties we're going to give out.
Yeah, we do. Our annual
Don't worry,
draft
guys.
Sporties.
Your sporty is in the mail. It's on the way to you.
Corona free, by the way.
Corona free.
We checked.
Sterilized.
We checked.
Yep.
Put a bunch of Lysol on it. We're good to go. So, Mitch, let us start with the first round, and we're going to give out an award for not the best player, but the best fit. The best fit player to team, which is always an interesting thing. I think in this first round in particular, there are quite a few interesting spots, but I'm going to go to you first. I'm going to defer to Mitch Moe. What was the best fit of the first round picks?
Well, there were about three that I was juggling, and I narrowed it down to two. But, you know, I think the best fit for me, and I'm going to give an honorable mention. I think we have the same honorable mention, so I'll wait to do that after you do yours. But I'm going to go with CeeDee Lamb from Dallas. I think this was the best.
Yeah.
This was a great, great fit for him. Look, what they're trying to do over there in Dallas is, and what they were missing was a slot receiver. Obviously, I mean, they have a total package receiver core now. You got the two guys on the edges. You got Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup, and you're going to have CeeDee Lamb underneath, a bunch of slot stuff. What did we see last time? They had a really solid slot guy by the name of Cole Beasley was there. And yes, I would classify him as super solid because of what he was able to do and what he meant to that offense, even if he wasn't having the high volume receptions or yardage. He provided a third option, a reliable third option. And CeeDee Lamb has the skill set, the talent to be that for him, only better than Cole Beasley was. So I think that this is a great fit for them. It gives Dak a third option. When you look across the board, just by adding CeeDee Lamb, you look across the board at the Dallas offense, it's pretty terrifying what they have at their disposal. One of the best offensive lines, now a very solid wide receiver core with their third option being that super solid slot rookie. Then you have Dak and Zeke to cap it off. I mean, this is just a pretty scary offense across the board. So I went CeeDee Lamb, Dallas. That's the best fit of the draft for me.
Yeah, it's a really good one. And Dallas, you know, really lucks out here at 17, not having to move up, But when they get to that spot and they see that name having dropped to them, they didn't second guess. They didn't overthink it. They had other needs, better, bigger right. needs. They could have used some edge guys. They could have used a cornerback, but they took the best player available. And they just said, thank you for this gift. And they just take CeeDee Lamb. And that's what smart teams do. They don't overthink it. They don't say, well, I really need this. And then you get a situation, not to call out other teams, but maybe Atlanta with A.J. Terrell, who I think is a good cornerback, but a reach there. But it was a position of need, and they just went out and got that position. And instead, a balanced team like Dallas can afford to take the best player available, in this case, CeeDee Lamb, and buy in even more to the offense that they had last year, which was number one in the NFL. They add to that CeeDee Lamb, another weapon for Dak Prescott, and now really impressive Dallas looking ahead at next year, especially on offense. It's going to be a huge pick. I love that, Mitch. It's a really good pick. It seems right. The Oklahoma guy coming down to Jerry World. It makes sense. I love it, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
My best fit pick is another wide receiver, but this one in the later part of the first round. I'm going with Brandon Ayuk to the San Francisco 49ers. And when I look at a guy like Brandon Ayuk, I was pretty high on him before the draft. But it all depended on where he went, because he's the type of talent that has to be used correctly, and if used correctly, can reach that full potential. And I almost literally wouldn't have picked a better spot to send Brandon Ayuk than the San Francisco 49ers in the offensive mind of Kyle Shanahan. And Ayuk, ironically enough, has a very similar game to Deebo Samuel, who they got in last year's draft. And they used him a lot in end-arounds, giving him the ball, letting him use his speed, his agility, working in space. They're going to be able to do the same thing with Brandon Ayuk. And now you've added two weapons in the wide receiver core, who can not only catch passes, but can also take the ball out of the backfield, can also take the ball in a jet sweep on an end around, on a reverse, on a fake reverse. I mean, you have so much more versatility. And what we've seen from Kyle Shanahan in this Niners offense is it's all about versatility, deception, movement. And that's exactly what Brandon Ayuk's going to flourish in. I really do think he has a chance to be one of the best wide receivers out of this class. And it's mainly because of the fit here in San Francisco.
Yeah, I really like it. You know, and like you said, he's a perfect fit for what Kyle Shanahan wants to do offensively, which is kind of a quasi run and shoot type deal where they're going to run and pound the football. But man, they got some quick guys on the edge that if they get in space, they're going to do a lot of things and do a lot of things right. You look at his combat results, he was an under a 4.5 40. Still a 40-inch vertical and a broad jump of 128. He is undersized. I mean, he's 6 foot. It's undersized for a wide receiver, let me say that. 6 foot, 205. So maybe not undersized, but pretty average as far as size go. But what he's able to do athletically, I mean, this guy, to me, is... I don't think a football player right off the bat when I think of Brandon Ayuk. He just seems like an athlete that happens to be good at football. And if you give him the right system, and I think Kyle Shanahan's the perfect fit, you're gonna see a lot of things go right for San Francisco with him in that offense.
Yeah, 100%. Before we move on, we do want to mention our combined honorable mention, because it was the other guy we both thought of, and that is Patrick Queen, linebacker to Baltimore. That was an obvious need for them. The fact that they got to stay put at 28 and take Patrick Queen is a huge win for them, not only to fill a position of need, but also get who I think is the second best linebacker in the draft, I guess, depending on how you classify Isaiah Simmons. But he's an extremely talented prospect. He's going to fill a hole there, and a guy that I think can just come in and be a leader. It seems like he fits Baltimore's style. You almost couldn't peg him in a better spot. I know in our mock, a mock we did beforehand, we had him going to New Orleans, which also would have been a great fit. But I really like this fit with the Ravens.
Yeah, I had him going to New Orleans, and then in a separate mock, I also had him going 19 to Oakland. I thought that might have been another spot where he would have fit really well. But like you said, fits the style of Baltimore, an in-your-face type defense, and Patrick Queen's an in-your-face, very physical type linebacker. So, But to CeeDee Lamb and Brandon Ayuk, your sporties are in the mail.
Your sporties are in the mail. I like it. All right, Mitch, let's move on to the underrated pick. So a solid pick that we're not talking about enough. There's some obvious ones. We've even mentioned a handful. What's one that's not getting enough attention right now?
You know, I'm going to go Jeff Gladney to Minnesota. This was a guy that I thought could have competed as one of the better cornerbacks in the draft. Now, there was obviously quite a few taken ahead of him. Jeff Okuda, C.J. Henderson, A.J. Terrell, who's the other one? Damon Arnett. I thought that Gladney was definitely better than Arnett. And I thought he was also better than A.J. Terrell. So I thought he would have gone probably mid-first round in that 12, 13, 14, 15 range. But he didn't. And he slips all the way to 31, where Minnesota doesn't even have to trade up to get him. They just sat and let him come right in his lap. So I think that's an underrated pick that, you know, it's a guy that probably could have gone close to 10, but probably in that 12 to 15 range, fell all the way to 31. He also went behind Miami took Noah
Igbinogene.
Igbinogene. There we go. That's another one of those hard words to pronounce.
Yes, that's a tough one. No shame in mispronouncing that one, Mitch. You get a pass there.
But I even value Gladney above him. So really, there were three corners taken ahead of him that I valued lower than where he was than him. So I think Minnesota got a steal at 31 getting Gladney, and he's going to be a great fit in that defense.
Yeah, I agree. I think Gladney had an argument to be the third cornerback in this draft behind Henderson and Okuda. Falling to 31. And here's the thing, too, with this. Minnesota actually traded back. They were at 25. And the Niners move up from 31 to draft Brandon Ayuk. Minnesota picks up draft capital to move back to 31 and still get a cornerback that you and I have as a mid-first round guy. So not only do they pick up extra draft capital, but they still get a solid player, a player they probably would have picked at 25 potentially, and they pick up the extra draft capital with that. So a huge win for Minnesota on that. I agree, Mitch. That's an underrated pick there. For my pick, I'm going to go with a top 10 guy, but I think a pick we're not talking about enough, and that's Jedrick Wills. The Cleveland Browns. Jedrick Wills ends up becoming the second offensive tackle off the board behind Andrew Thomas at number four. A little surprising to me that Wills ends up going second. I think Wirfs, to me, top guy on the board. Wills was about third. But I'm choosing this as underrated because of what it does for Cleveland. I think Jedrick Wills is a solid plug him in, he's going to be great for a handful of years, type of offensive tackle. And now when you're talking about Jedrick Wills, Jack Conklin, an improved offensive line for Baker Mayfield, I think that I'm even higher on Cleveland than I was before. I was really worried on where they would go with this pick, that they would mess this up and pick a different player or something that maybe they didn't need. This was a position of need, but they got good value for it. And I think because of that, I'm really excited for Cleveland, and I'm excited for Baker to now have two solid guys on the outside, and hopefully that helps not only in the run game but also in the pass game for that offense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited purely for the fact that Baker's on my dynasty team and I needed him to get some protection. But you look at Jedrick Wills and the Jack Conklin, the combination of those two. Conklin's played right tackle the majority of his career, right? So asking him to switch over to left tackle would have been a big asking call for him. Where Jedrick Wills, while in college, played majority right tackle, you're bringing him into a system where you can mold him to be that left tackle right out of the gate. You don't have to worry about switching Jack Conklin over middle of his career. You can start a guy by playing left tackle. And so and for that reason, in addition to all the reasons that you pointed out, Jedrick Wills, great fit to Cleveland. Baker needs to help. Nick Chubb needed the help. The whole offensive line needed that addition.
Yeah, 100%. And this is a guy who does have some college experience at left tackle. So you know that you can kind of flip him over, like you said, and feel comfortable with that. And I just think it can't be underappreciated what a solid offensive line could do for a young quarterback. And I like this pick because of that. So, Mitch, let's move on to a fun one. This is the WTF Sporty. AKA the pick that made us go, what are you thinking? Can I start this one off?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, I'm doing this in honor of our good friend, our very good friend, Tanner Pacini, who was reasonably distraught when this pick came through. And this is Henry Ruggs to the Oakland Raiders at number 12. And I will say this, I am not, I was not as shocked or dismayed or hurt by this pick as I know he was and other people who are Raiders fans. And I understand the frustration here because he was the first wide receiver off the board ahead of Jerry Jeudy and ahead of CeeDee Lamb. I did say, and we did a mock draft that we weren't able to put out for audio issues, but our friend Jordan Fox came on. We did a mock draft just a couple days before the draft, and I had given a prediction at the end that Henry Ruggs could not only be a top 10 pick, but potentially the first wide receiver off the board. So I guess I wasn't surprised to see him go first. I think if you're Oakland, I think this is a case of overthinking it a little too much and trying to replicate the success of other teams. And they've seen what Kansas City did, and they've seen the success that Kansas City had and thought, we need to get a Tyreek Hill type. Here's this fast guy. He ran a ridiculous 40. Let's just get him and try to do the Chiefs thing. I think that's just, not every team works the same. You have to, some principles in football make sense. Other things depend on personnel, coaching staff, etc. I think this was a case of overthinking it. So it was shocking in and of itself. So I'm going to go Henry Ruggs here at number 12.
Yeah, I agree with you. That was one of the other ones I was contemplating when I was putting this together. Look, you passed up CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy, clearly better options than Henry Ruggs. I get the speed thing. I understand that. But just better – Lamb and Jeudy are both better route runners. They have better hands. They just seem to grasp the wide receiver position a little bit better than Henry Ruggs. I thought Ruggs was still going to be a first-round pick, but as high as 12 when you're passing up guys like Lamb and Jeudy, just it doesn't make sense to me. And you know what? We've seen high draft picks go bad just when you base them off their speed. John Ross is the first one that comes to mind.
Maybe it's a little easy there, but that's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, high draft pick, but tons of speed, but it didn't translate well into being a good wide receiver. Yeah, he might get the big bust off the big plays every now and then, but he's not a guy that you could throw target 8, 9, 10 times a game and count on for 5 or 6 receptions. You just can't count on him for that. And so I think I hope Henry Ruggs turns out better than that for his sake and for the Oakland Raiders and the fans of Oakland Raiders. Or I'm sorry, Oakland, it's Las Vegas. I keep saying Oakland, Vegas, Dallas. I'm never gonna get used to this. Las Vegas. No, I hope for the sake of Raiders fans, the Raiders organization, and for Henry Ruggs that he turns out to be the guy that they thought he was going to be. But
yeah,
history just says there's been instances in history as far as the draft goes where that just doesn't pan out.
Yeah, it just seems unnecessarily risky, right? When you had better, more secure options, if you will. And yeah, there's obviously a huge upside to him. But at that point, it's like, why take this sort of risk? You're in a position where you just need solid players. You don't need, you know, you can't afford to take a risk. If the Cowboys at 17 take a flyer on Henry Ruggs, sure, they've got a great roster. They've got all these pieces. Why not take the shot on a guy if he's there? Like, certain teams can be afforded that flexibility. I don't think the Raiders are one. So, Mitch, what is your WTF pick?
I think I'm going with the one that I think most people reacted to. That's Jordan Love to Green Bay.
Yeah.
That to me was the biggest, what the hell are they doing? They realize they have Aaron Rodgers that I know is 36 years old, but he's still got 5 good years left in him. Like, this is a guy that's going to be good until he's 40. So why are you spending a pick now? Now, I understand, and a little bit of history, when the Packers drafted Rodgers in 05, Brett Favre was also 36 years old. So they're a plan for the future type team. But I just don't know if this was really, maybe because of the depth at the quarterback position, maybe they felt the need to go get it this year because they don't know what they're going to get in the years to come. And so they felt like, hey, because we got quite a few good options at quarterback, we might as well take this guy. But I feel like this was a guy that had a first round talent that could have slipped to the second. And they might have made a move in the second round that they could have traded up to get Jordan Love in the second. I don't think they needed to spend a first round pick on him. So for that reason alone, Jordan Love, I definitely said, WTF? Why are they spending this pick right here on Jordan Love?
Yeah, I think it was definitely the most shocking. Not that Jordan Love was a first-round pick, but mainly the team that picked him. And listen, the Favre-Roger comparison, to be fair, is not 100% accurate. They're completely different scenarios. One, Brett Favre had teased retirement multiple times at that point. And Rodgers was a prospect who was potentially top 10, who had fallen to them at, I believe, what, 23, 24?
24.
Where they got 24. So this is a guy who was supposed to be a top 10 guy, falling all the way to the 20s, falls into your lap. And again, it's like the CD Lamb. You just don't second guess it. You say, we'll take the talent and we'll figure it out. This one is a scenario where Green Bay actually traded up four spots from 30 to 26 to go get Jordan Love. And I understand the mindset, and I will give the Packers credit for this, because many teams have never been able to recover from not being able to replace their franchise Hall of Fame quarterback. I'll give you a couple examples. The Miami Dolphins have never gotten over Dan Marino. They have never moved past and found a replacement for Dan Marino. It's been how many years they've never been able to find a franchise guy like that, right? So if we're looking at it like this, that this is a franchise who has been preemptive with this, who have decided to pick guys even when they had the franchise guy so that they didn't have to worry about the years going by without having him. They didn't have to feel like they have to hold on to that Hall of Fame quarterback too long. And so for that aspect, I respect it. But at the same time, I think this is a scenario where if you're the Green Bay Packers, yes, you didn't help your quarterback now, and you should have. You should have drafted a wide receiver. You should have given Aaron Rodgers more weapons. He clearly needs it. But if Jordan Love in a couple years develops into a potential starting quarterback, you may have a situation, Mitch, that New England found themselves in a few years ago with Jimmy Garoppolo, where you have this potential starting quarterback, and you have a Hall of Fame quarterback who, it turns out, is still good to go. He's still healthy. He's playing at a high level. You don't need to move on from him. And now you can flip this young quarterback to a team who needs a starter. You could get great draft capital in return, and you go at it again. And if that's what Jordan Love ends up becoming, is a Jimmy Garoppolo who gets traded for, you know, a first or a second in the future, becomes, you know, a guy somewhere else, then I don't think it's a bad gamble to take, because as good as Aaron Rodgers has been, one injury and it's all over. I mean, at his age, at any of these, you know, one bad injury, these quarterbacks aren't going to be able to play for much longer. So I respect the forward thinking of Green Bay and not just knocking off quarterback as a position of need because they have Aaron Rodgers.
Damn. You owned me in that.
Yeah, I
just flat out owned me. Like
Not to be pun intended, no pun intended, but I don't love the pick. But I do understand where they're coming from, and I do think there are quite a few scenarios where this works out pretty well. And I think a lot of people are looking at this like, this is just a bad pick. And there is a whole question about the chemistry. How does Aaron Rodgers feel about it? How does this help the team? Is the team going to be on board with this? Is there going to be a divide between the new era and the old era? Like, this could go very wrong, no doubt. But I think there is a scenario where it could work out pretty well, or in the end it just becomes a Jimmy Garoppolo thing, and that is what it is.
No, I mean, yeah, I could see the scenario where it works out really well. I mean, I could see that as well. Just like you said, I just don't know if it was really their right pick. I mean, they don't have any weapons for Aaron Rodgers right now. You have to be okay now with Devin Funchess, Alan Lazard, or Jacob Kumro being your second best option.
Ew.
Disgusting. And so that's where picks like we had talked about in the draft, in the mock draft, and I know he went the pick before, but like guys like Brandon Ayuk might have been a good pick. You look at some of the second round wide receivers that went, they might have been the right selection to take in the back end of the first. So then it's like, okay, is it worth giving up the extra capital plus swapping the picks to move up four spots to take a guy that we're not going to play for 4 years when we have a Hall of Fame quarterback with plenty of talent still that we could give weapons to and maybe prolong his career because we give him weapons to throw to.
Sure, and I do feel that this could have been more defensible had they taken a wide receiver in the second round instead of running back A.J. Dillon, which again was like another thing where it's like, isn't this a position that we already have filled? Why are we going here when there's other obvious things like wide receiver that we should be looking? So I think if they go wide receiver in the second, you're feeling better about Jordan Love. You're like, all right, still got a solid talent, deep wide receiver class. Maybe they end up with Denzel Mims. You're like, that's great. And the Jordan Love thing feels better. But because they refuse to draft a wide receiver and address that need in this wide receiver deep draft, it feels even worse. You know, it feels like they even missed an opportunity even more. So, all right, WTF picks. Those were the two easy ones. All right, Mitch, let's stick with another fun one here. This is a little prediction here. Our highest Madden rating. This is just a little prediction on which player is going to have the highest Madden rating.
Oh, go for it.
I
was just going to say, yeah, I mean, and this one came about because Madden ratings in a weird way to professional football players mean so much to them right now. Like, you see the videos of guys during training camp reacting to what their Madden rating is because a new Madden game usually comes out about training camp, beginning of the season time, and they're like, oh, what's my Madden rating? That's my Madden rating. And they always think they're underrated. They always think they're underrated. And for some reason, too, rookies care about it just a little bit more. And so I thought this might be fun to just give a little prediction of who we think is going to be the highest rated in Madden. Like, who's going to have their feelings hurt the least is basically what I'm getting at.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. I will. I'll go first on this one. I am going to pick the best player in this draft, the number one guy on most everyone's board, and that's Chase Young. And I'm going to go a little further, Mitch, here with this. I'm going to give a prediction on his Madden rating. I'm going to say he comes in at an 82.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's where we're going. So 82 for Chase Young, and he's going to be the highest there in the Madden ratings.
Right on. I know I'll be taking him in some fancy drafts when I go franchise mode and start picking up some defensive pieces, some young defensive pieces. Look, I went defense as well here. I did Isaiah Simmons, typically because you and I are veteran Madden players, so we play a good amount of Madden.
I tickle the sticks.
Yeah, we play online together a little bit. We play by ourselves a little bit, and I went with, if there's something I've learned about rookie players in Madden games, it's that they tend to rate linebackers just a little bit higher than everyone else. And so I'm going to go Isaiah Simmons with the highest Madden rating. And I actually picked the same number you did. I picked 82. I think 82 is a fair shake for Mr. Simmons.
I like it. Any chance Joe Burrow ends up at the top?
Sure. I think if
you... Do you think over under that Burrow is an 80? Should take over or under?
See, I was thinking 80 was the one I was going...
I think so. So I would take, I guess, the over, I guess, what do you call that? Oh, he's going to be at least 80.
Okay, so
I
if you did so. Over under 79.5, would you take it?
Right.
I would take the over and go 80.
I think he ends up right about 80. I could see Tua at like a 77.
Oh, I don't know Herbert if Tua's a 76. 74 for Tua?
It depends on how the injury is. If he's healthy, they won't put him at a 74.
Now, here's the real question. Justin Herbert, over or under 72.5?
Oh, no, he'll be high. He'll be like a 75.
Yeah?
Yeah, I don't think they'll rate him. If he's a top 10 pick, I don't think they'll rate him that low.
Okay, maybe not. But
I guess we'll find out. This is kind of interesting now I'm thinking about this.
You know what? Another one I think CeeDee Lamb might be rated pretty high, too.
Ooh, yes. CeeDee Lamb's a good one.
Yeah, or Jerry Jeudy. Yeah.
CeeDee Lamb's a good one. All right, Mitch, let's finish up the first round. This is our last category, our last sporty here. It is the best player in 5 years. So essentially, this is how this works. At the end of the rookie contract, it's a four-year contract with a fifth-year extension. At the end of the rookie contracts, who's going to be the best player out of this draft? And I'm going to go I'll go first here, Mitch, and I'm going to go with a guy that you just mentioned, CeeDee Lamb.
Mm.
That's who I'm picking as the best player in 5 years. And I would not have picked that had he not gone to Dallas. I mean, before the draft, I like CeeDee Lamb. I think Judy, number one receiver on my board, I would have put Lamb at two. But because of the fit in Dallas and because of how much they rely on offense in that passing game, I think he's going to really shine. And I think he's going to have a lot of opportunities. So I'm very high on CeeDee Lamb progressing to the point that in 5 years we're talking about him as one of the best wide receivers in the league. So I'm going to go CeeDee Lamb, best player in 5 years.
I like that a lot. And I think that you made a very great point about the team that he wound up with being the driving factor behind why he's going to be the best player out of this draft in 5 years. Because you look at the guy, you look at the teams that picked before him, I don't think he would have had the same effect in Atlanta. I don't think he would have had the same effect in Dallas, San Francisco, Tampa Bay, Oakland, New York, or Cleveland. And even if you go – or Jacksonville, and if you look even as high up as number eight, where really the Cardinals would be reaching for him at eight, he might be pretty good with Kyler Murray there, but I don't think he has the same impact that he would there as he will probably have in Dallas. So I like that pick. I like that a lot.
Thanks, man. What about you? Who's your best player in 5 years?
I'm going with the easy one. I'm going with your boy, Chase Young, from Washington. Look, I think that defensive players can make such an impact by themselves on a specific side of the ball, and I think that Chase Young, paired up now with Montez Sweat on the other side in Washington, that provides a pretty powerful young centerpiece to their defense. Especially on the edge, you get those two guys coming off the edges. I think they're going to complement each other very well. Chase Young, to me, is going to be the best player. He's not only the most talented player in this draft, he's going to be the best player 5 years down the road.
Yeah, Chase Young is a great one. And I mean, if you even look at recent years, look at how many edge rushers have had an impact at that draft position, right? We look at Nick Bosa last year, an all-pro as a rookie, pro bowler, obviously. His brother Joey. We look at Myles Garrett. I mean, there are a number of early draft picks as edge rushers that we look at now as some of the best players in the NFL. So Chase Young is on that trajectory, and he projects almost better than a lot of those guys. If you look at it, I mean, I know the PFF grade is like the highest on any edge rusher that they've ever done. You know, ahead of the Bosa twins. So there's a lot of potential for Chase Young. I think that's a great pick.
All right. You ready to wrap up this first round and move on?
Yeah, let's look at the second round, and let's do this. We're going to do a little second round steal. So a guy that probably should have been a first round pick that's going to produce like a first round talent. And I'll let you go first here, Mitch.
Well, you know, I'm going to dap up your Carolina Panthers here. Let's go with Yetur Gross-Matos.
Oh, yeah, Yetur Gross-Matos. That's my dude. Let's go.
Well, you know, okay, hold on. While we're here, let's throw someone in the pit of misery. Trey Wingo, you're going to the pit of misery because you can't say any names right. You can't say any names right.
Yeah,
Tua Tagovailoa. Where's the end? There's no win in there. What are you talking about?
He was struggling with the Tua. I don't even think he said the last name even close. It was like Tua Tagovailoa. Like, I think he kind of gave up halfway through.
Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah, like Tonga Taika Waititi. It was
Pumba Hakuna Matata.
Listen. When he pronounced the Penn State defensive lineman as Yetur Gross-Matos, I just ran with it. And I know it's not correct. But he will always.
It sounds like someone violated your breakfast. Just like, oh no, Yetur Gross-Matos.
You grossed my toast, dude. Like what?
Oh no.
But poor kid's gonna be Yetur Gross-Matos for his entire Carolina Panther career, and I'm excited to root for him. But go ahead. Yeah, great pick. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, look. This is a guy that was supposed to go maybe back into the first round. We saw him as high as the mid first round, and he slips down to the second. Panthers get him at 206, 38th overall. Look, they just lost a very key defensive player this offseason and losing Luke Kuechly to retirement, an early retirement. And while that maybe they should have gone linebacker, and if you're looking for that leadership role, they can still get a leadership out of Gross-Matos. This is a very talented guy that has the ability to play down in a three-point stance, get off the edge in a defensive end type slot, or you can stand him up and have him be an outside linebacker. That's why he's labeled edge. He's very versatile. Tons of athleticism. Very dominant when he gets to the ball. Has a great nose for the ball. Very great pass rusher. Good run stopper. This was a guy that was a first-round talent that fell right into Carolina's lap, and they did the right thing by taking him at 206. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was. It's not the sexiest pick, right? But when you pair him with Derrick Brown, you know, KK, Kwan Short in the middle, I think Carolina's found themselves a really solid defensive line core. And they've always been predicated on the front seven. They've always prioritized that, especially defensive line. And last year they got away from that, even with a lot of talent. They, you know, a lot of sacks from the Carolina Panthers last year, but run defense, they were 29th in the NFL. So they shorted up with Derrick Brown. Gross Matos is a piece of that. But again, like you said, a guy who can also can be an outside guy, but he's big enough to kind of push inside on certain alignments. And so the versatility there on defense was huge for Carolina. I appreciate the praise here. I was pretty happy with Carolina's draft. I liked this pick as well. Good value.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, and I don't want to jump to conclusions and over compare him to someone, but very J.J. Watt-ish.
Wow.
Where He's got a great build. He's got a great body to him, long reach. But like you said, he's got the size and he's got the strength that if you could stick him inside, you could. If you wanted to stick him inside, you could. And he's able to do things on the edge that a lot of guys aren't able to do. Great pick. I mean, really solid pick.
Yeah, NFL.com has the comp here to him as Jason Pierre-Paul. Which I think is pretty spot on there. It's a really,
he's Jason Pierre-Paul with more fingers.
Yeah. And also a double hyphenated last name. So great, great, great comp there by NFL.com there. Really digging deep for that one. Mitch,
He is the 10-finger JPP. Love it.
Mitch, I'm going to give your team some praise here as a second round steal.
Oh.
This was not planned, by the way, guys. We didn't just choose to praise each other's drafts. But Mitch got one of my guys, and one of my guys this year is cornerback out of Utah, Jalen Johnson, who falls to pick 50 in the second round. I thought he was a first-round talent, a guy who could have been picked in the mid-first round, early 20s, perhaps, but he falls to 50. Part of that is because he played last year with an injury, and it still was a second-team All-American. So the injury was a concern, but he's just solid all around. He's competitive. He's succeeded at the college level. I think he's going to be, to be honest, Mitch, I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up as the second best cornerback in this draft behind Okuda. I think Okuda is a surefire thing. I think Jalen Johnson could be the second best guy in this draft. So to me, when you get that guy at 50, that's a huge steal. So congrats to your Bears on that pick. You look great, by the way. You look great.
I got my shades on now because I'm feeling real cool about this pick. What can I say? We pick ballers. We pick just straight up ballers.
Yeah,
Jalen Johnson's a baller.
You pick ballers like Mitchell Trubisky.
That was unfair. That was unfair.
I couldn't help it. It's low hanging fruit, but I couldn't help it.
Look, we hate Trubisky. You don't have to. Like, okay, hate blockers coming off. Look, we hate Trubisky. At least we have a kicker
also,
now.
You know who also is really good pick that you guys made? Kevin White. He turned out really well, too.
Hey, just blocking out the shades.
Yeah, put the shades back on. I'm sorry. Too much. Okay. All right. Let's. I can keep going, but I will not. All right, Mitch. Here's a fun little award we came up
with.
How
did Jimmy Clausen work out for you guys?
Hey, Jimmy Clausen. He sucked. That was a bad one. Touche. All right, so yeah. We're gonna go here. The next award is the Gardner Minshew Award, which is the late round quarterback who starts more than like three games that nobody saw coming. That's the award. That's the official name actually on the plaque that gets sent to the player. That is how it will be worded. So, Mitch, the Gardner Minshew Award, I'll let you go first here. Who is Your guy.
Look, I'm going to go to a guy that I don't think anyone's talking about. No one's talking about. And I'm going to go to him. I'm going Cole McDonald out of Hawaii.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's so seventh that's round such pick. That's such a good pick, Mitch, because it's almost got the feel of Gardner. He's a quirky dude. He's got the long hair and the dreads. It's like, for a white guy who played at Hawaii, it's like, it's got a vibe. It could definitely be Minshew-esque over in Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a very Colt Brennan feel to him, where he lit up college, and he's kind of a, like you said, Barry Gardner feel. He's a quirky guy. He's got the dreads. He's a seventh round pick to the Tennessee Titans. Look, Ryan Tannehill lit the field up last year in his stint as a starting quarterback, and they extended him. And so they're planning on Ryan Tannehill being the starter. So let's not confuse things that there's a quarterback competition. There's really not right now. Like, Ryan Tannehill's supposed to be their guy. But he went to the Tennessee Titans, who stuck too long with a quarterback, and it bit him in the butt. And Ryan Tannehill has had a lot of struggling years, and he had a very good stretch last year, but what's to say that he doesn't struggle again? And maybe by week 12, if things aren't panning out the way they thought, Cole McDonald gets just pushed into that role, and they're like, hey, go give us some starts and see what you can do. Limit his ability. Look, he's got a great arm. He played in Hawaii where they play that super spread offense where it's very Eastern Washington-like, where they run 5-6 wide and they're just heaving the ball over the place. Cole McDonald seems like a great fit for a guy that might start a couple games this year if things don't pan out at quarterback in Tennessee.
So you're suggesting that Tennessee might bench Tannehill for Cole McDonald?
If things don't pan out the way they think they will. Yeah.
Wow.
Who else is behind Tannehill?
I was just looking. I was just looking at this like an injury thing, like Minshew, like Foles gets injured and you have to throw this guy in. But holy shit,
sure. Okay,
he's actually not that bad. Like, you know, not that he lights it up. Like, Minshew didn't light it up, but it was like, oh, this guy actually, he might be pretty good.
Sure. I mean, injuries happen, right? No one saw a Nick Foles injury coming. Like, it
exactly.
Wasn't like waiting on the looms. Sure, those things happen, but like Tannehill has had a history of struggling mightily sometimes.
True.
Why not give this guy a shot? And there's really no one else competing with him for that second string spot right now.
It's just
Ryan Tannehill there.
It is literally the other quarterback on the roster is former seventh round pick Toledo quarterback Logan Woodside.
Never heard of him.
So you're going to – he was an AAF standout, I believe, back in the day. May have been on XFL team. I don't know. But
back in the day, that was fucking March, dude. What are you talking about?
But the AAF was like a long time ago. There's already been a whole
March,
other league
yeah.
come and go in the meantime. But yeah, good odds for McDonald to potentially win the backup job. So I like that pick, Mitch. I'm going even more obscure here. I'm going – undrafted, and I'm going with the guy at the Minshew Mania replacement, Anthony Gordon, out of Wazoo.
Whoa.
Anthony Gordon replaced Minshew last year at Wazoo, had a decent senior season, and it seemed like he was bound to be a sixth round pick, but he goes undrafted. And he signed as an undrafted free agent with the Seattle Seahawks. His hope that he stays in Washington, he goes to Seattle, and obviously we're talking here about injury. No one's beating out Russell Wilson for the job. Okay, we got that. That's easy. But we're talking about injury. Who's the backup quarterback in Seattle, Mitch? There is none.
Yeah.
There is none. And what if, in a world, Anthony Gordon becomes the backup quarterback? And what if Russell Wilson goes down with an injury, and who do they have to turn to? It's the undrafted rookie out of Wazoo, Anthony Gordon. And maybe he goes 3-2 in the stead of Russell Wilson, and now we've got some intrigue at the quarterback position in Seattle. So I'm going with Anthony Gordon. It's obviously this is all based on injury. None of these guys are going to win a job, but I would be curious about the storyline there and the whole Wazoo thing. That just seemed too easy for me. So I'm going to Anthony Gordon.
Yeah, hadn't heard of him until you just said his name. I'm looking on NFL.com right now. He had a prospect grade of 5.58, which means he's projected to make the end of a roster or a practice squad. So, pretty ballsy pick. But like you said, they don't have any depth behind Russell Wilson right now. So, he is the competition, technically. I mean,
he's the backup, for sure.
He's the backup. I mean, he is the guy that's going to be back there. So, behind Russell Wilson, not under center. Let's not get crazy here. But, yeah, okay. I like the ballsy pick. I like the ballsy pick a lot.
All right, Mitch, we're going to take a break from the superlatives to play a little game of, I don't know what we're calling it, this or that.
Yeah, let's call it this or that.
We're going to go this or that. I've picked a pair of players, same position, that went relatively the same time in the draft, and we're going to pick who we think has the highest upside for a potential career, right? Based on, I think a lot of these players, solid players before the draft, but it really depends on fit, and some of these guys are in an interesting spot. So we're going to play this or that, and we're going to start, Mitch, at the quarterbacks. Now, we had 4 first-round quarterbacks, 3 in the top 6. We had 1 second-round guy, Jalen Hurts, at 53 to the Eagles. And then no quarterbacks drafted in the 3rd round. Not till the 4th round do we see a couple guys go 5th, 6th, quite a few in the 7th, but interesting draft as far as mid-round quarterbacks go. So we're going to look at 2 here. We're going to pick between Jake Fromm, who was drafted 5th round, pick 22 to the Buffalo Bills, or Jacob Eason, picked round 4, pick 16 to the Indianapolis Colts. Mitch, who are you picking here? Who do you want here? You want Eason or you want Fromm?
I think I want Eason. I just think he's more polished as a passer. He has a whole another year of college football under his belt, being a redshirt junior, whereas Fromm came on as a true freshman. Look, he's also going to be playing behind Phillip Rivers over there in Indianapolis. And so I think that Phillip Rivers, who may be fiery and intense at times, seems like he'd be a really good mentor guy to a young quarterback. I feel like that Phillip Rivers, just based on personality and what we know about him from the outside looking in, seems like a pretty welcoming guy. And as far as sharing information with people, whereas you go to Jake Fromm, he's playing behind still a very young quarterback in Josh Allen, and maybe he might be able to pick up a few things from there. But Josh Allen seems like that's going to be the guy that they ride with for a while. So for me, I got to take Eason here. He's got the extra year of experience with the red shirt year now under over there at Washington, University of Washington. He's playing behind a very seasoned veteran in Phillip Rivers, who's had a ton of success at the NFL level. I like Jacob Eason over Jake Fromm.
Yeah, I think the thing with Fromm is it's just fit here, I think, more than anything. Because like you said, Josh Allen is a guy who was picked top 10 just a couple years ago. And obviously Buffalo has an investment in him. He's led them to the playoffs. They're going to stick with him. So the opportunity is going to be less for Fromm. There's also, I mean, they've got a quality backup in Matt Barkley as well, who I know is he's going to be 31 come time for the season. But they're going to probably trust a veteran guy like Barkley over Fromm. So he's looking at best case scenario, 3rd guy on the depth chart, you know, maybe a chance to sit and just learn and build up some skill and potential and wait for his spot. It's not a bad spot for Fromm. I'm definitely going Eason here, though, because you have, again, Phillip Rivers in Indianapolis, who at the most is going to be there for a couple years. They're going to be looking for a quarterback of the future. They obviously don't seem impressed enough by Brissett because they brought in Rivers. So Eason's got a really good opportunity to secure a backup job here and learn behind a great quarterback with a, I think in some ways, a very similar game, you know, a very similar skill set, and that's going to be huge value for Eason. Now, I don't know if he's the guy. He's a fourth-round pick. How many times is a team going to rely on a fourth-round guy to be their franchise quarterback? But he's in the position to develop that way and to potentially be that guy if all things work out for him. So I would go Eason here. I think he's in the right spot.
Yeah, no, I think he's probably in the most advantageous spot of a lot of these quarterbacks. You look at guys even like, I mean, you got look at guys even like Tua or Joe Burrow. They're not learning under anyone. They're really expected to be competing for a starting job when they show up at training camp. Same thing with Justin Herbert. The only other guy that really has the opportunity to learn under someone is Jordan Love. And we don't know how opening or welcoming of a guy that Aaron Rodgers is to sharing information or being a mentor to a young quarterback.
Yeah.
So Jacob Eason, you can make the argument, is in the most advantageous spot of all these quarterbacks as far as learning while riding the pine. So I Eason is an easy pick over Jake Fromm. I've never been a big Jake Fromm fan anyway.
I mean, me neither.
Georgia had too many other strengths that kind of just outshined him, and he never really proved himself as a solid passer to me while he was at Georgia. So I really like Eason. I think Eason's in a great spot in Indy.
Yeah, 100%. And I will say, having seen Eason play in person this year, I was extremely impressed with him when they came to Provo and pretty much handled BYU that game. He had a big arm, and he made big-time throws, NFL throws, and you could tell that just watching him play. I think he has high upside if he, you know, is able to develop and clean up his game more. So he's in a good spot over there in Indianapolis. So, Mitch, let's move on. Let's talk about we're going to do this or that with a pair of second-round wide receivers. The pick here is T. Higgins or Michael Pittman Jr. Now, for context, T. Higgins picked with the first pick in the second round, Cincinnati Bengals. Michael Pittman picked with the second pick in the second round to the Indianapolis Colts. So they go back to back here. I feel like they may be tied together for their careers in some sort of way, being closely picked like that. So who would you pick? Who's the higher upside, better situation here between T. Higgins with Cincinnati or Michael Pittman with Indianapolis?
You know, I think I got to lean Indianapolis again. I mean, you look at Michael Pittman. Let's start with T. Higgins. T. Higgins, ton of talent, right? Ton of talent, played for a Clemson team that had a lot of success throughout his entire tenure there. And I think that one day he's going to be a good wide receiver, but Michael Pittman's in a very advantageous spot. Again, he's playing behind T.Y. Hilton. He's got Darius Slayton, who was just a rookie last year that could help him adjust to being a rookie in the NFL. Michael Pittman right now, to me, is probably third or fourth on that depth chart, so he's going to get some opportunity. Now, T. Higgins is also going to get some opportunity over there in Cincinnati. But I think player build-wise, the quarterback situation-wise, I mean, you got to look at who's throwing to T. Higgins. It's probably going to be a rookie Joe Burrow, whereas Michael Pittman has the veteran Philip Rivers throwing the ball to him. I got to take Pittman in this one.
Okay. I mean, I really like Michael Pittman. To be up front here, I really like Michael Pittman. I think he's in a great position in Indianapolis to be the second guy behind T.Y. Hilton, to be a second option in an offense that's going to rely on a second option. I think Pittman, this is an easy comp, and it's been done before. I'm not the first to say this, but he has the potential to have a Juju Smith-Schuster type impact as a rookie. A second option who just comes in and really just plays well, gets a lot of volume. We saw that with Juju in Pittsburgh behind Antonio Brown. Pittman finds himself in a very similar situation with a veteran QB, knows how to get the ball to the right players, and I think Pittman's going to be a high-volume guy early on. But we're talking about career, we're talking about arc. I'm going with T. Higgins here, Mitch, because I think Joe Burrow in the Cincinnati offense is going to throw the ball a lot, and T. Higgins is going to have a lot of opportunity. Yes, they have A.J. Green. Yes, they have Tyler Boyd, but ironically enough, one of the comps for T. Higgins is A.J. Green. And we're talking about a guy here, T. Higgins, 6'4", 216. He's long. He's got a great catch radius. He catches the ball really well, and I think that's going to complement Joe Burrow very well in this offense as a guy where Burrow just is going to be able to get it to a spot and trust Higgins is going to get it. I think he will become an early favorite target for him, and eventually when they move on from AJ Green here in a couple years, he will have an AJ Green replacement and a great complement to Tyler Boyd. So I love the fit with T. Higgins as far as the type of wide receiver here with the Cincinnati offense, and ultimately I think he's going to have a lot of success. So I'm going to go T. Higgins here, but this is a tough one. I really like Michael Pittman.
Yeah, no, this is a tough one. And maybe I think of Tyler Boyd as the AJ Green replacement as far as being that number one when AJ Green decides to move on, just because I'm very high on Tyler Boyd.
Sure.
But you have a lot of valid points there where T. Higgins, you know, he's very similar build to AJ Green, similar skill set. And that's very valuable to have to a young quarterback, and especially if they can come in as rookies together, maybe that might have an impact on how they adjust to life in the NFL a little bit more. So very valid points. I understand the point for T. Higgins, but man, I really like Michael Pittman a lot.
Pittman's good.
I like him a lot in Indy.
Listen, I'm high on him in fantasy football next year, kind of hype for Pittman. Like, you know, take him as a guy who could be a solid flex potentially as a rookie. I think he's got a lot of upside as far as production, right, early on in his career. Let's move on.
I think he'd be a great late round flyer.
Yeah,
great,
exactly.
Late round flyer.
Let's move on to a couple of second round running backs. We're going to go here. Mitch, I didn't plan this, but ironically enough, each one of these has a pick that the Colts made at some point. I didn't mean this way, but this is what we're doing here. We're going to compare. We're going to pick this or that between DeAndre Swift, who is with the Detroit Lions second round pick number 3, after these two wide receivers, or we're going to go Jonathan Taylor second round pick number 9 to the Indianapolis Colts. Now, both these guys go into a situation where they aren't the clear-cut number one. Detroit has a guy, Kerryon Johnson, who's been pretty solid when healthy, right? And in Indianapolis, we have a guy in Marlon Mack who really showed out last year, really had a solid season, and seemed like he emerged as maybe the running back. What? Both teams spend an early second-round pick on a running back. Who are you higher on going into their careers based on this fit?
This is the toughest one because of the situations they're brought into. I mean, Kerryon's there in Detroit. Got Marlon Mack over there in Indianapolis. It's really of who's going to get phased out first. And I think, purely based off, and you know I love Jonathan Taylor. I'm a big Jonathan Taylor guy. Big Jonathan Taylor guy. I think that Kerryon will get phased out first, and we'll be looking at DeAndre Swift as the lead back in Detroit. And it pains me to say that because Jonathan Taylor, I think, is the better overall running back. He showed ability in his junior season to catch the football, a lot higher volume catching the football than he had in his previous 2 years. He's shown to be a workhorse. He could be a 20 to 25 carry a game guy while catching the ball out of the backfield. Did he set the NCAA rushing record? I mean, he was really close. I thought or it may have been just for Wisconsin, but he was up there, right? I mean, this is one of the most prolific running backs we've seen in NCAA history. But DeAndre Swift's skill set, his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield, especially in an ever-changing NFL offensive philosophy where across the league they're using running backs more prolifically in the pass game. DeAndre Swift seems like a guy that's going to be the better fit and probably going to be a little bit better than Jonathan Taylor. Not by much, but I think that he's going to be a little bit better than Jonathan Taylor.
Wow, Mitch, I cannot believe you didn't pick your guy, Jonathan Taylor, the guy you've been high on, you've been advocating for.
I mean, but you got to look at where they landed. You got to look at where they went. And, you know, Jonathan Taylor, I think, is going to be a great fit in Indy. But I think DeAndre Swift's just going to be a little bit better fit in Detroit.
All right. Well, I am, Mitch, I'm wavering here a little bit. I'm actually going to go with Jonathan Taylor here. And I think this is a pretty tough one. And that's why I picked the matchup, because I think both are in an interesting spot, right? On the one hand, you have DeAndre Swift, who is competing with Kerryon Johnson. But Kerryon has had injury issues. And clearly Detroit is thinking ahead here and thinking, we've got to get a solid guy. Because this was a team last year that with Kerryon on the field were probably a, you know, at least a 500 team, if not potentially a playoff team, if Stafford stays healthy, if the health is there. Clearly they need depth and they need guys at skill positions that can play. So getting DeAndre Swift is smart here. I do understand the potential for him to get injured and Swift to be able to take over. I'm going to go with Jonathan Taylor here because I feel like the investment in Indianapolis into their running backs is less than the investment into Kerryon Johnson in Detroit. Marlon Mack is a fourth round pick. It's not a pick that they used very high on a guy. Jonathan Taylor, an early second, a guy that you know is going to come in and run the ball. We saw him do it in college. Two-time Doak Walker Award winner. I mean, this is a guy that Phillip Rivers is going to be handing the ball to 200 times next year. And I think I expect that. I expect Jonathan Taylor to be the guy next year. Because I don't think you draft Jonathan Taylor without intending on playing him immediately. Because he has the wear and tear on his tires, right? We know how many carries he has. So you're capitalizing on him now. And I think he's going to be able to have immediate success, which is going to propel him further. So I'm going to go slightly here, but I'm going to go Jonathan Taylor over DeAndre Swift because the competition ahead of him is going to be easier for him to get to. And ultimately, I think he's the type of player that's going to come in and do a lot of things. I think it may take DeAndre Swift a year or two to earn a starting job, perhaps.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I mean, I think you can make an argument for both, and I think we just both did. And so I love Jonathan Taylor.
You
so
do?
Much.
You? I know. I'm glad I
That's
got to
my baby
for
boy.
Him.
That's my baby boy. I love that guy so much, but you know, and it's a very slight edge, by the way.
Sure.
I don't want to say like DeAndre Swift is head and shoulders above Jonathan Taylor. But you know, I think where they landed, there's just a slight edge there, and that could shift by the time we get, you know, when we get to training camp, whenever we get to training camp,
true.
whenever that is, that could shift. But you know, as of right now, just purely based on landing spot.
Yeah, 100%. And I will say here, too, DeAndre Swift was my number one running back on my quote-unquote big board going into the draft. He was the guy I thought was the best running back available. So even though he was the best guy available in my mind, I picked Jonathan Taylor. So fascinating stuff. Mitch, we're going to wrap this up by looking at the big picture, talking about the best drafts. But we're going to start now with the best draft, but the most under-the-radar draft. A team that completed a draft that not enough people are talking about. Is it all right if I go first here?
Yeah, go for it. All right.
I'm going to go with the team here that didn't even have a first-round pick, but I think had an excellent draft, and that's the Buffalo Bills, a.k.a. Carolina North, over there in Buffalo. Shout-out to Sean McDermott and the GM Bean and all the great Panthers players playing for Carolina North up there in Buffalo. They had an excellent draft, and I am including in this the trade for Stephon Diggs, because they did trade a first round pick for Stephon Diggs, and had they not traded for Stephon Diggs, they most likely spend that first pick on a wide receiver. So I'm counting Stephon Diggs as that first round pick, which is obviously fantastic. You get AJ Epenesa at pick 54, number 22 in the second round, a guy like Gross Matos, who we talked about earlier, had first round projections. They got him in the late second, didn't have to move up for him. He's a type of physical presence that fits so well in Buffalo. They pick up Zach Moss, the running back out of Utah, in the late third. Again, a guy who dropped a little, but I thought late second, early third was a spot for Zach Moss. He goes in the late third. A great compliment to Devin Singletary, a guy who's going to be a great goal line back, a power type runner. He's got speed, he's got elusiveness, but he really can. He's Marshawn Lynch-esque. The way he runs the ball, Zach Moss. I think he's going to be a great addition. We talked about Jake Fromm. Isaiah Hodgins, the sixth round pick, wide receiver out of Oregon State, I think has some late round potential there as a guy who could really end up being a solid number three wide receiver. I think Buffalo had a very, very good draft. They added solid pieces across the board. So I'm going Buffalo, my most under the radar draft.
Okay. Yeah, I think, and especially with the AJ Epenesa pick, that's what makes him most under the radar, I guess, snagging a guy that late when we were talking about him going to the back end of the first or early second. Getting him at that spot definitely qualifies him as an under the radar draft. But I got one I think that tops it, Dallin. I think it tops it. I'm going with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
They had a good draft. They really did.
Look at the two first rounders here. You got CJ Henderson at number 9 and then at number 20, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't want to pull a Trey Wingo here. K-Lavon Chasen.
There we go.
K-Lavon Chasen out of LSU. Two very solid first round picks. Now Henderson did go a little bit higher than probably where we project him to be. But I still think a very solid cornerback to get out of Florida. Then you look at the rest of the draft, LaVisca Chenault out of Colorado, the wide receiver. You look at Ben Bartsch, offensive tackle out of St. John's, Shaquille Quarterman, linebacker from Miami. And then you also look at Colin Johnson, wide receiver out of Texas. They got him in the 5th round. Just overall, a very solid pick. I didn't realize they had this many picks. They had two firsts, a second, a third, 3 fourths, 2 fifths, 2 sixths, and a 7th. So they were pretty loaded up on the draft picks that they had going into this draft. But this was a team that I think that addressed a lot of needs. Especially early on when you look at the defensive side of the ball, because they lost so many defensive sides and probably going to lose Yannick Ngakoue at some point. He's probably going to be out of there before we know it. So they addressed a lot of needs, and I think they did a good job at addressing all those needs when they were at their highest value as far as who was available.
Yeah, 100%. No, I was impressed with Jacksonville. Really just taking solid players all around. I love LaVisca Chenault. I think he has the potential of a Brandon Ayuk that in the right system he can work. I'm not sold on the fit with Jacksonville. I hope Jacksonville is creative enough to use him in the right way. I think he's the type of guy that should get a couple carries out of the backfield. Also should line up as a wide receiver for a lot of snaps. I think you need to use him in multiple positions. I hope Jacksonville does that and unlocks the full potential that Chenault has there. Davon Hamilton, the defensive tackle at Ohio State in the 3rd round, is a very good pick as well. I think a lot of value there. Shoring up the defensive line, again, a strength of the past for them. They also shore up the secondary with C.J. Henderson to pair with the other pieces of the secondary that they have. So Jacksonville, they got a very good draft pick. They hit the positions of need as well. They also took, you know, guys with a ton of upside. And I think that's the way to do it. You want solid players, but you also want guys that could be steals. And I think I look at like a LaVisca Chenault as a guy who could potentially be a steal as we look back on this. And even a Colin Johnson in the 5th round, the wide receiver out of Texas, 100% there too. So I like that, Mitch. Let's talk about, we did most under the radar draft. So now we're going to do the best draft in 3 years. So as we look back 3 years from now, who are we going to say this team most definitely had the best draft? I'll let you go here, Mitch.
I'm going back to our boys that we've been talking about a lot over the last 20 minutes. I'm going to the Indianapolis Colts.
Is it clear that we like the Colts? Because we have mentioned them a lot.
I like the Colts. I like the Colts. Look, for what they did without having a first-round pick, I think is phenomenal. You get Michael Pittman Jr., Jonathan Taylor, Jacob Eason. You got Julian Blackman, the safety out of Utah. I'm looking at the other ones. Denton Patman, wide receiver out of Washington State. Jordan Glasgow, linebacker out of Michigan with their last pick of the draft in the 6th round. Like, they just added, I think, a lot of right pieces. They may not be the best ones, but you're not looking for the best guys. You're looking for the right guys in the draft. And I think that they added a lot of the right guys and addressed a lot of needs, especially at the top end of their draft with Pittman and Taylor. And then you could look down to the middle where they took Eason in the 4th. They addressed a lot of the needs that they needed. I think they took the right guys. I think that 3 years down the road, we're going to go, wow, Indy really nailed that draft.
Yeah, and I think I look at it like this, Mitch. I mean, first off, their first round pick, they trade away for DeForest Buckner. So essentially, right. they drafted DeForest Buckner in the first round as opposed to taking a prospect, which, fair enough. Pay the guy a lot of money. He's a great defensive tackle. It's a position of need for them. Fills the middle. Great pick. I think if you look at their second through fourth round picks, so that's Michael Pittman, the wide receiver, Jonathan Taylor, running back, Julian Blackman, safety from Utah, and Jacob Eason, the quarterback from Washington. I think those four players could be future starters for the Indianapolis Colts. And if you get four starters at key positions in the first four rounds of your draft, you're doing pretty good. And give Indianapolis credit here. They have drafted extremely well. Just a couple years ago, they had the Quentin Nelson, Darius Leonard draft. Two Pro Bowl, all pro level guys that they got in the first two rounds. And now they're getting Michael Pittman, who we both feel like could be a steal at the wide receiver position. Jonathan Taylor could be the best running back in this class. Julian Blackman's a safety out of Utah who played injured this year, who got injured in the Pac-12 championship game. If he did not get injured in the Pac-12 championship game against Oregon, he is probably a second round pick, maybe even higher. But he falls because of that injury, a serious injury nonetheless. But that could be huge value looking forward. And again, we talked about Jacob Eason in the fourth round, a guy to put behind Philip Rivers and potentially be your future guy. If it works out right, there's at least three starters in my mind out of this draft, if not a fourth with Eason. And if you found your future quarterback in the fourth round, that is a huge win. So I'm with you here on Indianapolis. They have drafted well of recent history, so no need to doubt here. I think they showed that the mojo, it continues for them.
Yeah, no, definitely. Okay, that's my best draft in 3 years, Dallin. Who do you think has the best draft in 3 years?
Well, mine's another team that has drafted reasonably well themselves over recent years, and it's the Baltimore Ravens. Baltimore Ravens, we talked about them with Patrick Queen earlier. A steal in the late first, not moving and getting Patrick Queen. In the second round, they get J.K. Dobbins, the running back out of Ohio State. Some thought first, second, third running back. He ends up being the fifth guy off the board. And now, yes, they have Mark Ingram, but he's 30 years old. Now they potentially have a guy to replace him for the next 4 or 5 years. In J.K. Dobbins. Justin Madubuike in the early third was a guy people thought could go in the late first, early second. It's huge value at the defensive tackle. Devin Duvernay out of Texas, the wide receiver in the third. Malik Harrison, linebacker in the third. There are guys that they got in the second and third round who are legitimately starters for this team. And again, like we talked about with the Colts, when you are picking up starters, solid players for great value in the second, third rounds, even in the late first, like they did with Patrick Queen, you're doing it right. Baltimore always does it right. They're going to get multiple starters out of this draft, and they're already a team that has a pretty solid roster, and they just added even more. They shored up defense in a lot of ways. They added weapons on offense for Lamar Jackson. They drafted guys with high upside that kind of fell. Even James Proch out of SMU in the sixth round, that's a guy a lot of people think is a huge sleeper. That's a sixth round pick there that they spent on Proch, who could end up being a great wide receiver for them. So Baltimore continues to kill it year after year. They were 14-2 last year. I think they did great stuff for Lamar Jackson and this team. Yes, they could have spent a higher pick on a wide receiver, but I think the way that this is designed, I think they're okay at wide receiver, and I like Duvernay and Proch as guys with high upside potential to be steals. So I'm a big fan of Baltimore. They're the team who I think in 3 years we're going to look back and say that was a hell of a draft.
Yeah, I love Duvernay out of Texas, and like you said, James Proch, a guy that a lot of people were thinking that he's going to be an absolute steal getting him in the sixth round. I think that's going to be a great pick for them. One I'm leery of, and I don't have a good reason why, is Ohio State's J.K. Dobbins. I'm just not fully set on him. Couldn't give you a good reason why, but I think that he might be a one trick pony. He might just purely be a receiving back, and so that might be something that I might be a little bit wary of. But I think the Baltimore Ravens nailed it right off the bat with getting Patrick Queen. Like, that just made their entire draft. I think after that, even if they took mid-tier guys or guys that we were thinking like, oh, yeah, it's a good pick, but it's nothing outstanding. Even if they did that for the rest of the draft, you nailed it with getting Patrick Queen at 28. So, but I do like the Ravens The Ravens draft, absolutely.
Yeah, I think I look at J.K. Dobbins, and it's a kid who rushed for 2,000 yards last year and had 21 rushing touchdowns. And I think he's going to be able to come in and be productive and be a great complement to Mark Ingram in year one, maybe year two, but a guy who could take over the job come, you know, his second year in the league and be your guy. I think J.K. Dobbins could be that. And we know the shelf life of running backs, and we see it. You know, we see teams regret paying guys like David Johnson and Todd Gurley. We see teams refuse to pay guys like Jacksonville right now, who's kind of in a situation with Leonard Fournette. Don't really know what to do. Don't really want to pay him. So I think he's going to get taken. I think the Ravens are going to use him early because they understand the shelf life of these running backs. The value that they bring on the rookie contract is too good to pass up. I like Dobbins. I don't think he's the best. But I like him in Baltimore, and I like Baltimore doubling up on the run game because they've fully invested into the run game with Lamar Jackson. So why not take a talented running back in the second round and give another edge, another piece to throw at defenses when they're trying to figure out what you're going to do game by game?
Yeah, sure. Definitely. Absolutely.
All right, Mitch, that's about it for the NFL draft. Anything we want to mention here before we wrap up?
You know, I think I'm good. I think we got everything.
Yeah, I like I said earlier, I was pleasantly surprised with how the draft went. I was excited because I loved the NFL draft. I'm glad it went smooth. I'm glad it felt like the draft, but it was a little different. We had the viral moments. We had, you know, Cliff Kingsbury's house, which was an amazing flex on all the other NFL head coaches, right? We had Bill Belichick's dog, Nike, drafting picks in the chair at the kitchen table. You know, we had some great moments. And at the same time, we had the draft we knew and loved. And it was great. It was a good time. A lot of interesting picks, a lot of solid picks. Good overall. I was really pleased and really happy to have something in our lives.
Yeah, no, very impressive how they produced this thing. I think they did a great job, given the situation, doing what they did to make it a successful draft, and very entertaining for the viewer. I think they did a fantastic job. Like I said, I just wish there were 7 more rounds.
Yeah.
That's all I wish.
Well, now, Mitch, it's time for fantasy football, and I am I'm ready to get this rookie dynasty draft out of the way. I'm ready to do my redrafts. I'm just ready. Like, why wait? Let's just do it. I'm not actually advocating maybe the rookie draft, sure, but actual redraft leagues should wait a very long time because we don't even know if football will be played in September. So I don't recommend that. But I'm just ready. I'm just feeling antsy.
Oh, I'm so antsy. I was just talking to our commissioner, Jordan Fox, and Tanner Pisini. I was like, can we just do the rookie draft like a week after the NFL draft?
Yeah, because we don't need to wait. What are we waiting for?
I just need my fix. I need my fix. Now, I am craving it right now. I need my fantasy football fix. And we'll have Jordan on here in a future episode to do our fantasy football stuff like we do before every fantasy football season. So we'll have him on in the future to do that. But yeah, just, I cannot wait. I need this to all end so we can just get back to sports as usual, get back to football as usual, so I can be a normal sports fan and have to stop watch marble racing. I can't watch marble racing anymore, Dallin. I am developing a gambling habit by watching marble racing. I can't do it.
Oh my goodness. Oh, I do gotta mention, this was the first year that I ever put it's the first time I've bet on anything, Mitch. I put money down on some prop bets, some first round prop bets, which did not go well for me. Though I did only put $20 into it, so I didn't lose that much. But it didn't go well, but I think I found a new thing. And I think I'm not going to be able to not do this every year. It may not work out well for me, but I had a new added pressure to the first round as I was watching, hoping to win some money. I picked some high upside things, guys, like Jalen Hurts getting drafted in the first round, over 0.5 that of tight ends drafted in the first round. So picking that a tight end would be gotten in the first, which they didn't. Hurts obviously didn't go in the first. It was not good, but it was fun nonetheless. I may have to do this in the future. It was, you know, a fun year for the draft, Mitch, and ready for live sports to come back, ready for fantasy drafts. and ready for normal life. Before we wrap up, Mitch, is there anything that you've watched, anything you've listened to that you've enjoyed during your last week of quarantine?
Well, I finally watched Tiger King.
Oh, yes, Tiger King.
That's an experience, I'll tell you that. Holy crap. Those are real people.
Yeah, it turns out, not actors, not paid actors.
Those are real people. Holy crap. I could not believe what I was watching when I was like, oh my God, these are real people. These are actual things that they do. And I also learned that Jeff Lowe is a dirtbag piece of shit. Like, Jeff Lowe sucks.
Yeah, screw that guy.
Oh, and Carol Baskin. Killed her husband, whacked him.
Are you going to do the TikTok dance too?
No.
No.
I'm not going to do that one.
Disappointing.
That's a little too much.
Tiger King is great.
Too much.
Tiger King's
speaking
great.
Speaking of betting, just because, so I'm going to lose track if I don't ask you this. I think you owe us a water bet.
You know, now that you say that, you are absolutely right. So we did this on a podcast that didn't come out, but with Jordan, we made a water bet on the Chiefs drafting a running back. I was on the other side of this. I didn't think they would draft a running back. And you and Jordan were both on the side of a running back. Now, you guys did say Jonathan Taylor, but nonetheless, the draft was a running back, and I was wrong. So before the next pod, I've got to spin the wheel of water and take my punishment like a man. But you got to hold me accountable to that one.
Yeah, I think your wife would be a great marksman to give you those dumps of water that
she would
you
love
deserve.
That. She would love that too.
And we'll get that on the Instagram because I believe I shaved my head and we put it on the Instagram and the Twitter. So we're going to make sure that they go on both.
Fair enough.
But so back to the conversation before we wrap it up. Is there anything you have watched during this quarantine that you're going to advocate for that you enjoyed?
Oh, I got to say The Last Dance, this Jordan and the Bulls documentary, recapping the era of the Bulls and particularly the 98 season, that final championship, it's been fun. Four episodes out so far. I've watched them all. Very interesting to see the background, the stories behind guys like Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, even Phil Jackson, as they've gotten into. And I know they will get into more of the players, guys like Steve Kerr, maybe Horace Grant, right? Maybe Charles Oakley, Bill Cartwright. There are John Paxson. There are some players on this team. And they're kind of giving you a nice look at really the depth of these guys, how they all came together, and ultimately how they pull off that final championship in the midst of chaos in the franchise. It's been a ton of fun. I highly recommend the mature version, the unedited version, because everyone in their lives needs some Michael Jordan F-bombs. It's fantastic. So it is a ton of fun. I highly recommend it. Any sports fan, even if you're not a sports fan, it's a fascinating doc on personalities, egos, relationships, and how people competing for the spotlight can come together and have success. So I highly recommend it. The Last Dance has been great.
Now, was this pre or post Ron Harper?
He's on in part of it. So that's the thing. The 98 season, I don't believe Harper's on that team, but they do talk about the 91 finals, the first trilogy. They talk about even the 80s Bulls and the team around Jordan then. So you see quite a few players from different eras of the Bulls, of different eras of Jordan's career with the Bulls, and then highlighting more so that final season. But you do see quite a few characters, which has been pretty fun.
Yeah, I plan on starting that one tonight as I snuggle into bed and find my comfy spot for the night. I plan on starting The Last Dance
and get berated by Michael Jordan. Great plan before you go to bed.
Love it.
All right, guys. Well, that'll do it for us. We appreciate you listening, hanging out with us. We'll have more stuff coming in the next couple of weeks, but feel free to subscribe to the podcast if you don't already on Apple Music. Follow us on Anchor. Leave us a voice message there. We would really like to hear from you. Any thoughts on the draft? Any of these categories that we've covered? If you have any candidates for a Gardner Minshew Award, a second round steal, maybe the WTF moment for you, whatever it is, share that with us. We want to hear from you, and we want to use that on the show as well. So feel free to reach out and give us your thoughts.
That's right. And if you haven't plugged our socials yet, which I don't think we've had, you can go follow us on Instagram at the Sports Hour Guys. You can go follow us on Twitter at Sports Hour Guys. Go ahead and on those podcasts wherever you're listening it to, that's Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, go ahead, leave us a rating, leave us a review, tell us we suck. That's the only way that we can get better.
Absolutely. All right. We appreciate it, guys. We will catch you next week.
See ya.